Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Monday, February 26, 2018 edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. As always, I am your host, Robert Weihos, coming to you a little later than normal. I do apologize for that. We had some technical issues behind the scenes and we were scrambling like madmen to get going. But we are back on with you. Of course, if you want to add to this conversation, just give us a call. 605- Let's try this again. I'm still getting things together over here. And actually, we apparently have a 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Just hang on a second. Let's see if my co-host, who's been waiting ever so patiently, got in on the line. Zach Haydorn, is that you?
That's me.
All right.
How's it going, Robert?
Better now that we are on the air after some very, very tense moments.
There we go.
Yeah, it would have driven me crazy to not talk about everything we have to talk about this week after all the hype
we put
into it.
I know. It's littered with content, so I'm glad we got this off the ground. Great to be here.
Cool. And, of course, you can get in not only by calling into the show at the number I just gave you, but you can email MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. Always monitoring that inbox, always looking at what you guys are sending in. And if you put in something during the show, I'll read it on the show. If you give me something later in the week, we'll look at it and we'll read it on the show next week. And of course, the most direct way to get in touch with the show in real time is on Twitter at MMATorch. That's another inbox, so to speak, that is always open, but especially during the show, it's active. We're looking at it, we're checking on it, we'll read your tweets on the air, take your question, however you want to interact with us, we are good to go with that. All right, Zach, let's get right into it today. We got a ton to talk about, but I think the most important thing to talk about wasn't something that happened in MMA over the weekend, but rather something that happened in pro wrestling. It was, in fact, Ronda Rousey's first advertised appearance with the WWE last night at their Elimination Chamber pay-per-view event. For those of you on the MMA side who don't know what happened or maybe have been offline for a couple of days, we had Ronda Rousey signing her Raw contract, essentially is how it was framed. A little funny because they ran mainstream news headlines where it shows that she had already signed a contract with the WWE, so that was a little bit of disorganization on their part, a little bit of quality control, perhaps, that they could have done better at. With that said, it seemed to be this big old ceremony. You had Kurt Angle out there, who, of course, is currently serving as the general manager of Monday Night Raw, but is a former WWE champion, and maybe more analogous to Ronda Rousey, an Olympic gold medalist, out there with Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. The thing seems to be going as planned, and then they got a little off course when Kurt Angle mentioned how it seemed like the McMahons were manipulating Rousey. Rousey did not take kindly to what was being suggested. Ended up throwing Triple H through a table in an awesome throw. Triple H got some major air. I mean, if he was in bad shape, he'd be out of action. If he was Scott Hall, he'd be out of action for like the next 4 years after taking that bump. Ronda Rousey eats a slap from Stephanie McMahon, which means she's officially in the WWE. I think that's like the WWE's version of being ranked in. You've got to get slapped by Stephanie. And the segment, while it was a very rough start to the segment, seemed to be very well received, very hot in the building after it. Zach, what were your overall impressions of the segment as a whole?
As a whole, I thought it was really good. I thought it started off slow and it was headed towards some dangerous waters for a while at the beginning. I think, you know, Ronda getting emotional on the microphone and kind of, you know, being able to not control her emotions in front of a live audience like that, I really thought was going to send the segment off kilter within the first 5 minutes. I still think she's a little too smiley walking out, and you know, she needs to be able to control those emotions when she walks out and faces an arena, and remember that she's, you know, she's telling stories here, and her emotions have to fit in to the story she's trying to tell. That said, as soon as they got into the, you know, part where they were going, where Ronda was going up against Stephanie, and she got physical and she got focused and she got kind of her mean mug on, I really felt that she was more comfortable in that sort of role. I think, you know, when she was able to get physical and, you know, get in Stephanie's face, get in Triple H's face, when it almost felt like she wasn't thinking, she was just reacting and being herself with the volume turned up, that's where I thought she really started to click on all cylinders. And I think that's a really good sign. So that all worked for me. I thought the table spot was great. I thought her taking the slap to the face was even better. And it also leaves something to be desired for the audience. Like, now the big piece of the story is, or when is Ronda finally going to get her hands on Stephanie McMahon? So I'm glad they didn't give everything away right out of the gate, but what they did give away, I thought was really, really good. As soon as Ronda can just button up some of those minor reaction things that just come with doing pro wrestling for a long time, once she gets that locked down, I think she's going to be in good shape. I thought it was really good, really effective, and she can only go up from here.
Yeah, I gave a big plus on the segment as a whole on balance. That start was pretty rough, and she's just not a great speaker on a microphone yet. And that we've seen with other performers who go through the normal path, not everybody starts out great on the microphone. People don't just come out. They're not Rocky Maivia, where they can just go and go and go as soon as you hand them a mic. They're not The Miz, who, if you look at early Miz work, he sounds worse than me on this show with his battle with the English language at times. But he got better as time went on. Ronda's being put in a position that virtually no one is ever put in so quickly. And it was funny with her getting choked up with the emotion. It got me thinking, wow, she hasn't been, you know, Ronda Rousey in an uncontrolled environment in a very, very long time. If you recall, after she lost to Holly Holm, she went into hiding, did no media, did no public work, none of those things that are really these boilerplate veneer events to get people to like you and appreciate you. She refused to do all that before UFC 207, and since then her only appearances are in very controlled environments where she's, you know, there with Ramona Shelburne as Ramona's holding the tissue for her, or she's at Ellen, you know, in another very controlled environment. That was the first time she got to be with that real environment. I thought the reaction was decent to her. There were some boos, but the passion for her seemed to be very strong, that they were willing to drown out, something they don't do for other performers when they're getting booed. It's not like the people love John Cena, but whenever he's getting booed, it's not like the John Cena supporters do their best to drown out the people that are booing her. So I thought that was a very positive sign for her. Of course, they are in Vegas. Technically, you know, you might consider that home turf for her in her hometown. So it might be different in other places, but I don't think she was very much affected by the booing at all. She seemed to be affected by the moment that she was in. But once the physicality got, and once she flipped that switch and turned into Rowdy Ronda Rousey, that whole building was completely into everything she was doing. I thought she still has a star quality about her. She doesn't have to speak. Goldberg is a star, and he's terrible at talking, but he's a star. And I think you can be a star in the world of professional wrestling without having to give these long, drawn-out promos. A lot of pro wrestlers aren't very good at it. And one last note I'll leave on just analyzing this segment as a whole. This morning I rewatched it again on my tablet, and my wife was kind of looking over my shoulders, and she was, you know, noting how bad Ronda was on the mic. And she thought, why don't they put that little short, fat guy with him? And I just started laughing. I'm like, yep, that's the conventional wisdom, especially if Brock is out of the picture. I think Paul Heyman, it would be perfect that he's the guy that's always kind of in charge of the shoot fighters, whether it's back in the day, you know, he's the guy representing Taz. He's been aligned with Kurt Angle, currently with Brock Lesnar, now with Ronda Rousey. That would be a nice little bit of continuity. But talking about that short...
Yeah, and the other thing, too, to just piggyback off that is, like, you know, the bottom line here is, look, you know, Ronda's stepping into this world for the very first time, and the thing that's going to get her over most and make her seem legitimate in the eyes of wrestling fans is going to be what she can do in the ring. I think people are willing, and in last night's reaction, proves this. I think people are willing to give her a little bit of a longer leash on the microphone as long as her in-ring physicality and her in-ring work is good. And since she aced that part of yesterday's segment, I think she's laid a really nice base for herself to grow in that area and also, you know, eventually down the road build up her mic skills. But ultimately, she got it done where it counted last night, and that's in the ring, that's with her physical presence, and that's going to take her a long way in the end.
I do wonder, though, what can she string together a match? And I think that's going to be the big what if until WrestleMania. And I don't even think we're going to get an answer for that at WrestleMania, because she'll be in the tag, and the big moment match will be when, yeah, whether it's Kurt Angle or Seth Rollins, when they finally tag Ronda in, it'll be the big moment where she finally gets her hand on Stephanie. So we won't know that for a while, but that's fine. There's a lot of hate, yep, on the idea of this match, and I understand on the surface why it might not be very exciting. I mean, Triple H and Steph in a tag, that hardly seems like the most exciting thing in the world, but you've got somebody for a couple of years that you're trying to bring, if you want to bring them along slowly, the worst thing they could do, I would think, is if she's not there yet, is send her out in a 20-minute match, right, with somebody like Charlotte or Asuka, and then she would just look terrible. I think they're protecting their investment. Yes, it's not the most exciting, exactly, thing, but if she's in there with, say, Kurt Angle, Triple H, and Stephanie McMahon, there's a whole generation of fans that don't watch the product anymore that watched when those people were at the top of their game. That's something that can bring fans in. It's funny to think about it now because of where everybody in this position is currently. But if you remember, there was a time when they sold a ton of pay-per-views a decade ago with Bobby Lashley facing Umaga, which was just the surrogates for Donald Trump, Vince McMahon, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. It brought a little bit of pop culture, a little bit of the old style stuff with some new stuff, mm-hmm, together, and that pay-per-view did a ton of business, and this could be the same. There's still concerns with Rousey, but there's going to be concerns with anyone. What are you expecting out of her tonight here in about 30 minutes? If she is on Raw, what are you expecting to see from her tonight, Zach?
I'm for tonight's performance, I'm looking for her to, you know, maybe, like, it's tough to say because I don't think they should give away any of the Stephanie Rousey stuff till later on. The physicality between the two of them until later on. I think they should wait. That's kind of the ace up their sleeve, and they should either play it, you know, close to WrestleMania, and then, you know, go into it fully at WrestleMania, or just save that physicality until WrestleMania and make that be the hook of why people are going to want to watch this match, because they're going to want to see Ronda get her hands on Stephanie. So taking that out of tonight's equation, I think we're going to see Ronda somehow parlay the relationship with Kurt Angle. In my opinion, that's where this thing is going. Kurt and Ronda against Stephanie and Triple H at WrestleMania. So I look tonight for them to kind of solidify their bond together, whether that's a promo segment backstage or maybe like a segment where WWE.com caught up with Ronda last night and she, you know, talks highly about Kurt Angle. But I really think they need to start developing the reason why Kurt and Ronda will be teaming together. I think they'll start there tonight, and then once that's set, then they can start lining up the Ronda, Kurt against Triple H versus Stephanie story, because I think that part's already written between Ronda and Stephanie and Hunter. Like, you know, Ronda embarrassed them on the grandest stage at WrestleMania 31. She embarrassed them last night. You know, that story is in the can. That's off and running. They really need to solidify who Ronda's partner is going to be and tell that story well so that people care about them eventually winning a match at WrestleMania. So I'm looking for that. Maybe a little bit of work on the mic. You know, I think very, very little, short and sweet, right to the point. Nothing that she can get messed up with in terms of the crowd interrupting her, et cetera, et cetera. But I do think she needs to get on the microphone so that she can keep getting better and keep working the crowd reactions. And the other thing that I think she needs to do tonight is control those emotions. Like, she can't be walking into arenas night after night looking like, you know, you know, overblown with star power and overblown with, oh my God, I'm in the WWE. This is amazing. Like, she's in the middle of a story now. She needs to act like it. She needs to act angry. She needs to act like, you know, nobody takes advantage of me. Like, I'm Ronda Rousey. Like, you know, Stephanie, you're not going to pull a fast one over me. You're not going to manipulate me. She's got to convey those emotions better. I'm not saying she has to fix it 100% tonight, but she's got to start taking baby steps to not be this starry-eyed child when she walks into the WWE arena. So as far as the check marks go, I think if she cuts a short, concise promo, and I think if she can get those emotions under control, for, you know, step in the right direction on that, then it'll be another win tonight as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm rooting for her necessarily, but I want her to end that story, I think, as you said, because I feel like all the coverage from the skeptics, especially within the MMA bubble, seem to just focus on, oh, well, she has to go to this work sport now that she couldn't beat the real fighters. And I don't think she does enough to dissuade that right. When she looks like that starstruck person who's just there and happy to be there and having a good time. If she can look cool and doing what she's doing, I think that neutralizes that a lot. You know, it sort of puts that real serious tone to what she's doing. Right. Let's segue off of Ronda Rousey and talk about something that I guess would be considered maybe Ronda Rousey adjacent, because last night we had all the makings of like MMA and pro wrestling and their beautiful merger that, and the, you know, Ronda Rousey is going to be the contemporary example of what that is. But of course the modern pillar that's built on is one Mr. Brock Lesnar, who it emerged yesterday from Dana White's Twitter account, the cheesiest selfie of all time, him and Dana White looking like they are so happy to be together and to be hanging out together. Of course, a lot of speculation about Brock going back to the UFC. There's some mixed messages on his contract status. I know Meltzer has kind of said that, yeah, it ends at WrestleMania, but it kind of seems like they might have some exclusive rights over him until like August or so, which really wouldn't be an issue for Lesnar in any way because he still has 6 months to serve on the USADA suspension. So, Zach, what, if anything, do you read into that very happy selfie that Dana White tweeted out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how else to read into it other than get some business between Brock Lesnar and the UFC is coming down the pipes. Like, I don't see, you know, Dana teasing that for no reason. He doesn't normally do things for absolutely no reason, neither does Brock Lesnar. So to me, that it's a pretty simple puzzle to solve in that I think somewhere down the road, whether in this year, I think we're going to see Brock Lesnar back in the UFC in some capacity. Now, I don't know that it's going to be completely fully Brock signing an exclusive UFC contract. Maybe it's a one-off type deal like the thing at UFC 200, but to me, that selfie and that picture shows that there's something going down, and we need to all pay attention to Brock Lesnar as far as mixed martial arts goes, because I think he's gearing up for a fight this year.
I do as well, and it could be even early 2019, just based on how the suspension goes and what they need to book. I'd assume he'd be the that they would have a bigger window than they did last year. He's probably penciled in for, if they do the Garden show again in November, he's probably the big attraction that they'll position with. I've been on record on this show week after week after week saying that his next contract is going to be, it's going to have explicit language where he can do both, maybe like a trumped up version of what Bobby Lashley had with Impact Wrestling, where if he's going to go to the UFC, they don't have to do all this negotiation. They don't need to run ads, or maybe they do. Maybe that's part of what they negotiate. But regardless, I don't believe his story in the WWE is done, even if he hasn't signed a new contract. I think there's always going to be a demand for him within professional wrestling. And he's negotiated the most sweetheart of terms that any performer really has ever negotiated with that company, aside from maybe like Ultimate Warrior right. back in like the 90s, and that didn't end well. This is going relatively well for Lesnar in the WWE. Now, I would say this, though. He has done this before. I think it was back at UFC 184 last time, before WrestleMania 31. Everything about this WrestleMania seems like we're in a time warp, where we're going back to WrestleMania 30, yeah, where it all began again, so to speak, where you have Ronda Rousey facing off against Stephanie and Triple H, and you got Roman and Brock in the main event. I mean, according to Kurt Angle, it's WrestleMania 21, so we're really going back in time, according to Kurt Angle. Uh, but
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's why I tweeted that yesterday. Man, he's like the worst Dana White ever in the pre-show. He's going listing the matches, and he clearly has no idea who any – he just knows these guys' names. So, like, when they ask him, he's like, yeah, I believe Sasha Banks and I believe Alexa Bliss will do great. It's like, yeah. And it's funny because he kind of looks like Dana with the bald head and stuff, but, yeah, he was a terrible Dana. I don't know why I got off on that tangent. But regardless –
it's so hard to
– yo, he's – yeah, he is brutal. And I – throwing back to the Ronda thing – that's why she needs a mouthpiece, because she can't rely on her to be her mouthpiece.
No, I know.
And you would think, you know, a seasoned performer. Part of what made Kurt so special, tying back to the Ronda thing, was that he was more than just this amateur wrestler. He was more than Dan Severn. He had a personality. He still has a personality. He's just not very coherent. He's more of a PSA for what can happen for years in the ring.
Yep.
Yep. Back to Lesnar, I do think that all this is a bit of a dog and pony show. I think Dana probably likes there is some seriousness to it, but Dana probably likes trolling everybody. You know, it's Mayweather and McGregor still with his headlines these days. I think this is a bit of Dana's chance to jump back into that water of what's going on. Brings some speculation, not a lot of excitement around the UFC brand currently. So I think that was a shrewd move on his behalf, but I think there's definitely going to be more to it. Look, when did Mayweather-McGregor get serious? Whenever all of a sudden a picture emerged with McGregor standing with one of the Fertitta brothers in Vegas, and it's like right after that the ball got rolling. I can definitely see this as an extension of that. Any final thoughts on the Lesnar situation, Zach?
No, I mean, I think we summed it up pretty good. And you know, I just think that it'll be really interesting to see what that his next deal with the WWE and UFC, if there is one on either side, because, you know, it's hard. I think it's gotta be hard to balance those two schedules. You got to balance, you know, the injury element to it. Brock Lesnar is not a young spry guy anymore. At some point, Father Time is going to catch up on him. And I think he's got to decide which one he wants to do. And if he wants to fight, you know, the opponents for him are and I wrote about this in my column today for MMAsports.com. The opponents are ripe for him right now. I think he does have some people in that division and in the UFC that he can have decent fights with and also draw some money with. So if I'm looking at that and I'm him, I'm saying, you know, now is the time. Maybe back, you know, right post of WrestleMania 34, maybe the time wasn't right, but I'm sitting here now and I'm looking at guys like Francis Ngannou, I'm looking at guys like John Jones, and I'm thinking to myself, man, there's some opportunity there. So I think while the situations between the two, you know, time periods are similar in a ungodly amount of ways, I think the difference is that I think, you know, there are some good opponents for him now that could really spark some attention and create a lot of revenue for that company. So I think he sees that too, that side of it, and says, well, you know, now is the time. Whereas 3 years ago, maybe it wasn't.
No. And he's of much more value to them now than he was 3 years ago. And I think he's acutely aware of that. Before we go to break, Zach, I got to tell you, man, whenever we couldn't get online a minute ago, I was panicking. I was freaking out. I'm pressing buttons, sending emails, going back and forth with you. The only thing that would have calmed my nerves is if I got a knock on the door and somebody showed up with a bottle of wine. Would that have made the situation better, in your opinion?
Oh, my gosh. That would have been great. I almost was reaching for the bottle to see it.
Well, you're putting together coherent sentences, so I'm glad you didn't. But that would have made everything a lot nicer. At least it would have given me something to look forward to at the end of this show. Now, the reason why I talk about that is I want to introduce you to Wink. That's W-I-N-C. Now, what Wink does is it makes it easy to discover great wine. Because Wink's wine experts select wine match just your taste, personalized for you, ship right to your door, and they start at just $13 a bottle. That is not a high price tag at all. There's nothing like coming home to a delicious box of Wink wine selected just for you. It's really the best day of your month. You know, I went car shopping over the weekend, so that's like the worst day probably of my life, I would assume. But, you know, the Wink Day, that would be the best day of your month, and you would have 12 of those a year. That's 12 great days a year for sure. All you got to do is fill out Wink's palate profile quiz. Answer simple questions that your average store clerk, you know, they wouldn't think to ask you or translate into a recommendation. you know, questions like, how do you take your coffee, or how do you feel about blueberries? No way your store clerk is coming up with that kind of questions and then figuring out how to, you know, satisfy their customer based on that. You know, and what Wink does, they send you wines curated just to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your selections get each month. So, you know, there's really a system here. The more you get into it, the more they build that profile on you and know what you want, what your tastes are. Each month, there are delicious new wines like the insanely popular Summer Water Rose. There are no membership fees. You can skip any month, and you can cancel at any time. That's awesome. Shipping is also covered, which is a big deal. And if you don't like the bottle that they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle that you will love. No questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/PWTorch, and you'll get $20 off of your first shipment. That's trywink.com/PWTorch for $20 off that first shipment. trywink.com/PWTorch. All right, guys, let's go to break, and we got a couple of you on hold, and we'll get to you on the other side.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Back at you, Robert Vallejos, MMA Talk for pro wrestling fans. If you want to call the show, just dial up 515-605-9345 and then press 1 on your dial pad to let me know that you want to come on, and we will get you on. That's what these people right here we're about to get to did, and they're going to be on the show. Let's go to first caller 818. What's your name and location?
Hey, guys. It's Rick from Alaska. How you doing, Robert?
Hey, Rick. How's it going, man?
Hey, man. What's up? Pretty good. I know you guys are going to talk about it pretty soon, so I don't want to get into too much details, but I just want to say that the Fox show that just happened over the weekend was incredible. Like, I just about every fight I enjoyed. I didn't see the fight past prelims. It's one of the few times I hadn't got a chance to check it out yet. I'm going to see him tomorrow, but my God, like, every single fight delivered in some way, shape, or form for me. And it's a little too bad that we'll probably remember the event for the controversial ending. But again, I know you guys will get to that. And I just want to say that Ronda's contract signing, while it was kind of entertaining, and I agree with most of what you guys said, I do think that they should limit her mic time as much as humanly possible, even like having a Paul Heyman at let Kurt talk for her, for, you know, as bad as that is. But it was kind of interesting. I heard Todd Martin say on their WWE roundtable discussion with him and Travis Bryan and Wade Keller how not a lot of it didn't seem like everybody was in support for the crowd. She was getting a lot of backlash. And I wonder if you guys think that was sincere or that was just kind of the counterculture thing to do to boo Ronda.
Zach, what do you think about that?
I agree with the latter. I think it is more that counterculture feeling that just seems to be in a handful of WWE crowds now. I mean, there was parts of last night, and I tweeted this on my personal account during the show, that, you know, the crowd was cheering for Nia Jax over Asuka. And it's just like, you know, come on. You know, I just roll my eyes at that because I just don't feel like that's a genuine cheer for Nia Jax. I mean, nothing storyline wise would make you want to cheer for her. I mean, and for the longest time, she's been booed by a lot of audiences. So I think there was something in the air in that audience that kind of enhanced kind of that counterculture feel and that counterculture voice. But I think more so that's what it was in terms of Ronda Rousey, and I'm glad that the rest of the audience was able to squash that a bit.
There is definitely a legitimate wave of anti-Rousey sentiment that I don't think we should completely dismiss, because I do believe it's there.
No,
and it probably, unfortunately for her, like at an environment like a WrestleMania is when it will rear its head the most, or perhaps even the night after, where you get the smarkiest of crowds. With that said, for the most part, Zach, I do think it's more of the general counterculture phenomenon. And I'll just point to, you know, the guys that are sort of the maestros of getting booed in, like a John Cena or Roman Reigns. Those guys can do all kinds of cool stuff, and they'll still get booed at the end of their segment. Maybe they'll get a quick pop for a cool spear or a cool spot, but then they'll go back to booing him. When that segment with Rousey was over, maybe there was boos and the people cheering were so loud, but there was not a single boo for her. So I think it's more just a rebellion against the system in general and not really a focused rebellion in this case. There could be more down the line, but I think in this case it was more just the, hey, it's fun to boo whatever WWE's feeding us, so let's just boo it regardless of the quality of the content.
The other thing on that too is that, you know, the boos were coming when she was started her rough road on that microphone. I think that it started there a little bit, and I think she was able to save it because of the rest of the segment. So like you said, they got to keep her mic time short. I think last night was a good they got some good insight as to what she does well and what the crowd wants to see out of her. And I don't think they want to see long-winded promos. So hopefully they learn from that, and their reaction goes along with that education.
What are the questions you got, Rick?
No, that's it. You guys have a good day. To be continued.
All right, Rick. We'll talk to you soon. We'll keep in touch.
Later, man. See you guys.
Okay, Rick drops off. That leaves the line open for you. 515-605-9345. Get the next caller on the line. This might be Skype, but I don't know if they're a normal Skype caller. You're on the air. What's your name and location?
Hey, guys. It's Valentin from
Russia. Valentin, it was you. Okay, what do you got for us today?
What's up, man?
Well, I don't have to go to work right after my call because I'm on a week vacation, finally.
Congratulations. Enjoy. I don't know why you're listening to us if that's the case.
I will go to Norway tomorrow, so like now I have kind of normal schedule, but I'm going to Norway tomorrow. Well, I have kind of random question. What do you think about live music as a part of MMA presentation, and do you think UFC would benefit from live music as part of the entrance for main event fighters?
From the experience we have in pro wrestling, I don't think live music generally comes across well in that environment. And I don't know if it's just because we hear those songs played in their normal studio format or what it is, but it doesn't always come across well. Like, I love Motorhead as much as the next guy, but they were terrible when they played Triple H out to the game. I think it was at WrestleMania 17. Same thing with Living Color and Cult of Personality. That didn't come across well. There's a lot of instances. I think POD did a pretty good job with Rey Mysterio back at WrestleMania 22, that kind of fit. And every time they bring out Saliva, maybe because Saliva is just a terrible band, but other than that, I think it's always been pretty bad every time. I don't know how that would work in MMA. I mean, of course, I guess the fear would be that we have, like, Face the Pain being played live at the beginning of a pay-per-view. I could see someone like Bellator really trying to do that, and I think it would be cool if it's tightened up and really incorporated into the entrance and more than just a song that is playing. I don't even know who the band was, but the band that played out Aleister Black at the NXT, not this last one, but the one on SummerSlam weekend, that came across cool, and Aleister Black was part of the entrance. And even, dare I say it, whenever Limp Bizkit played out The Undertaker back to WrestleMania 19, that was kind of cool the way it played out as part of the entrance. Bellator likes to orchestrate the entrances that they do. Did you look at the way they do Chael Sonnen, where they put his talking points into his entrance, which I think is very cool? I think Bellator could pull it off, but there's so many bad examples on the pro wrestling side, I don't know if it'd be a good idea. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah, I think, man, it's tough because you think that there's a little bit of a market for that, just given, you know, who the audiences are, but it's just, I'm with Robert on this one, and it's an idea, it's a good idea conceptually, but then when you get down to it, it's just like, yeah, you know what, I want to hear CM Punk come out to this, you know, the regular Cult of Personality. That's what I know, that's what gets me the biggest pop, and for as good as, you know, a live show can be, you know, when you're at a UFC event, wanted to see a guy come out, like, you want to, you pop for what you know, and I think the live element of that would take away from that experience. That said, I think there could be a way to maybe Bellator is a better place for this to happen, but to intertwine maybe new artists of some kind, where, you know, they're not charged with, you know, perfectly executing a cover of a Motorhead song, but they, you know, they just, they play their own songs. You know, they you know, appeal to that fight audience, that Bellator audience, but they're not charged with specifically playing entrance songs for people. So I think if you, you know, intertwine it in a different way and not use it as entrances, I think that might work better, because it just never goes off like you think it should or like you think it would when they've done things like that in the past. So I would stay away from it unless you could come up with a creative way to showcase some up and coming talent, you know, maybe work with a label or two to promote them, and then in turn have those shows, you know, promoted by the label. I think there's a partnership to be had there, but I just would take it out of that whole walkout music thing. It just doesn't go the way you think it will when it comes time to execute.
So, Zach, are you more in favor than like of a house band essentially being part of the presentation?
Yes. About part of the presentation, and then, you know, part of, you know, the promos, the commercials, you know, everything like that. They can be a part of that, but just, I would just stay away from the entrance music thing. I don't think that works. But I think, you know, look, fight fans, there's a, you know, I'm sure there's a big chunk of that are, you know, music.
All right, Zach, you're cutting out. It kind of sounds like we got a remix going on with you there. So, but I think we got the gist of what you were saying there.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
And now, hopefully for the third time tonight, we are back at it. Let's see if I can bring on Zach once again. Zach, are you still there?
I am still here. The wine has not hit me yet.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah.
I'm not sure what happened there.
You might need a wellness test after this show, the way things are going. I do apologize to anyone listening live. I know it's not the greatest listen when people drop off mid-sentence or we're starting late. Hopefully, though, if you listen to this on demand, we'll be able to clean up a lot of this and get the normal coherent show out of it. Normally, we're on here with our friend Sean Ennis. And apparently he's the glue that holds this whole thing together, because he dropped off for 1 week and me and Zach are just bumbling and stumbling around over here. But we'll try to stay on track. Zach, speaking of things that were wild and a mess and all over the place, as mentioned by Rick, we had ourselves a pretty wild card on Saturday. What'd you think?
Yeah, we sure did. I echo his sentiments wholeheartedly. I thought it was a really fun show. I thought all the fights, you know, had some really great moments and were very entertaining. And for the most part, I thought it was a really good card that, yeah, will kind of be a little bit overshadowed by the events that took place in that main event. But all in all, I thought the card was really fun, and I had a great time watching it. It was great. I loved it.
I did as well. The main event that everybody's talking about for a variety of reasons, Jeremy Stevens and Josh Emmett attempted to murder each other in that fight as they were just throwing haymakers all over the place. Jeremy Stevens gets the KO, excuse me, at 135 of the second round, but it was not without controversy. At one point, it looked like Josh Emmett was possibly a grounded fighter. Jeremy Stevens attempted a knee. Don't know if that knee quite connected. It's been like the Zapruder film of MMA recently, but he also had some blows to the back of Emmett's head, which seemed to be actually more egregious, although many noted that those are rarely called in the course of a fight. I don't have the energy, and apparently we don't have the bandwidth to discuss every little detail about what happened here, but I think this speaks to just a bigger issue in MMA, that there is such ambiguity about the rules. And look, and I get it, especially for a referee. These are professional athletes, professional fighters who are striking at an incredibly rapid pace. But with that said, even after it all goes down, nobody can seem to agree on what is a foul and what isn't a foul on in MMA. It's basically like the catch rule in the NFL that everybody's got a very strident opinion on it, but nobody seems – there's no consensus on any of it. Do you feel, Zach, that this was really a negative note for MMA officiating and the rules that are in place as a whole?
I do. I really do. And it also, you know, put a kind of a black eye on what was otherwise a really good event. And to me, I just always go back to, just like the NFL catch rule, I don't know what's so hard about putting like a concrete rule in place. You know, figure out what you want it to be, relay that to the referees, relay that to the fighters, and then hold to it and take the ambiguity out during the fight. If it happens, you know, there you go. Stop the fight, pull back, take points off, et cetera, and move on. But you got to have that baseline of this is legal, this is not legal, and then stick to it. Just like in the NFL, this is a catch, this is not a catch, and then stick to that. But, and I think if you do that, you just avoid all sorts of problems. And the other thing I think they need to be able to further clarify is, okay, what do you do after the fact once something like this happens? I think there needs to be, you know, concrete rules in place there as well, where it says, okay, you knock somebody out with a illegal elbow or knee or whatever the case may be. Like, you know, there should be a clear cut ruling made on that too. I think UFC and MMA would really benefit themselves if they would just put these rules in place and stick to them. I don't see the issue. It just seems like an obvious job to get done to me, and it just hasn't been done to this point.
And this all seems symptomatic of the issue of not having a national regulatory body for mixed martial arts, in the fact that all of these rules and all these procedures vary slightly from state to state. That's just ridiculous. I mean, we talked about the NFL, and maybe they get it wrong in every state, but the Arizona Cardinals game has the same set of rules as a New York Jets game. And that's just not the case in MMA. And, you know, we always joke about the unified rules are like the most divisive thing ever. It's an oxymoron of a phrase. And it looks like there is limited use of replay, but there's not really a precedent of how to use it. So I just think, you know, it's still a new sport. We're still figuring it out. I think that was mentioned on the broadcast. I thought Dominic Cruz really made a fool of himself on the post-fight show.
Sure did.
I can't think of another person in sports media that – I was so high on maybe like a couple of months ago that right now I just cannot stand anything about him on my TV screen or in my ears. To me, he just it was his teammate that in Steven. So there's that, and that does happen. It happens in all sports. You do have teammates or close acquaintances in the broadcast booth. That is one issue, but I don't think that was the issue here. It was just like his assertion that the ref didn't call it, therefore it's not a foul. Well, then why do we pay? Why is anyone paying you to discuss what is or isn't a foul, Dominic Cruz? That makes no sense at all. And he has this way of insisting he's right on everything without listening to discourse. Unlike Daniel Cormier, who initially was like, no, none of this is a foul, saw it again, and then was able to alternate his opinion based on information. I just thought Cruz had himself a bad night. And what did you think of that, Zach?
Oh, I'm right there with you. He looked, you know, he became immediately not credible in anything that he was saying. I mean, and I'm not sure it was the teammate thing, but it's almost as like he just didn't want his initial reaction and his initial opinion to be wrong. So he doubled, tripled, and quadrupled down on it in the same broadcast when the entire viewing audience is seeing with their very own eyes that, in fact, you know, look, those were fouls. I don't think you're crapping on a teammate by calling a spade a spade. You're being a good announcer and a good viewer of the product and someone that's, you know, trying to convey to an audience what happened inside that octagon. And I think Cruz really just completely missed on that. I thought Cormier was really good in how he handled it. I also thought he was really good in how he interacted with Cruz during what was going down. But man, Cruz just, he looked really bad. He was totally wrong, and there's no two ways about that.
In the co-main event, Jessica Andrade really took it to Tiesha Torres, getting the unanimous decision 29-27, 29-28, and 29-28. Jessica Andrade, as I've said many times on this show, I believe at the time when Joanna Jędrzejczyk was the champion, she was the best strawweight not named Jędrzejczyk. That seemed to be maybe further reinforced this weekend with her performance. Some people even drawing the comparison to Daniel Cormier, which I thought was very interesting in that she's very good, just can't get past one individual or one entity. Of course, now that Joanna's not Joanna champion, can't call her that for the time being, she's not that anymore. There might be a clearer path to the title for Andrade, but they're going to settle that very quickly. So I think even if Joanna retains, I think Andrade is still the number one contender. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah, I think, I mean, yes, I agree. I don't have too much to add to that because I think that's 100% right. I mean, look, she looked, you know, very dominant in her performance. I thought we'd get a little more from Tisha Torres, to be completely frank. I thought she would put up a little bit of a better fight and come to the fight with a better game plan, but she didn't. The business was taken to her. And yeah, you got to think that Andrade has set herself up nicely here to fight for that belt at some point. So I agree with you 100%.
And it's funny, as I'm watching the fight, I'm thinking, wow, this really speaks to how dominant Joanna really was around that time period of UFC 211.
Yeah.
Just the fact, the way she was able to neutralize and game plan for her, it's very impressive. And because Andrade, even since that, in their two fights, has just massacred her opponents without finishing them, interestingly enough. But, I mean, the lighter weight classes, there's not always a ton of finishes. We did also have on the card, third from the top, Yair Latifi getting a real interesting submission, the standing guillotine over OSP over in St. Preux, and OSP looked out for a minute. Were you concerned in those moments there for OSP, Zach?
Out of the gate, yeah. I mean, when he just did not. I don't think he looked good throughout most of the fight. Something just to me looked off to him, and then yeah, when he got in that submission, I mean, I was concerned that. Man, it's like those knockout moments where initially you have that reaction of like, oh my God, that's fantastic. Oh, how, you know, what a great move or what a great punch. And then you start to look at it more and the human side of you takes over and you say, oh man, is that guy okay? And this wasn't a knockout situation, but I was concerned of like, man, I had that thought cross my mind. Is that guy going to be okay? I'm glad he is. But man, yeah, he really got to take it to him, and Latifi really, He
dominated
his fight.
And in the opener of the main card on Fox, you had Mike Griffin scoring an upset win over, excuse me, Max Griffin, scoring the upset win over Mike Perry. I think the more interesting part about this was after the fact when Colby Covington was talking smack to Mike Perry on Twitter, talking about his girlfriend who was in his corner, which it's fine. That's Colby Covington's dick. But I'm like, dude, it doesn't like the rule of business that you always punch up, you don't punch down. Like, what's the point of going after Mike Perry? Clearly he's lost his last couple of fights, and you, Covington, are at the top of the division. Mike Perry's a fun fighter, but not close to that at all. There's just no point to that. To me, that's wasted energy for like no good reason.
I agree. And it's almost like, you know, yeah. Why are you playing down there? You clearly have some bigger things that are going to be on the horizon. Just why even bother except to just be a pain in the ass?
Yeah, that's well put. I would recommend to anyone who hasn't watched the rest of the card, the undercard we talked about last week, how it was a very sneaky preliminary card and fight pass card, and a lot of those fights had some very interesting outcomes and some interesting thing goes down. So if you haven't checked out the card, this one's definitely rewatchable. Not all of them are rewatchable, but this one absolutely is, and it's worth your time.
Yeah.
Let's go to another break real quick, and then when we come back on the other side, let's preview the pay-per-view we got coming up this weekend.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Yep, if anyone from PW Podcast is documenting us in real time, I don't want to read that review after the show that me and Zach are putting on here with all our technical glitches. So have mercy, PW Podcast. All right, Zach, let's get in a little bit to what we got coming up this weekend. UFC 222 just kind of really came upon us quickly, it feels like, maybe because the main event only recently got settled, but it feels like we're in one of those stretches. We're gonna get a break pretty soon. We're gonna have an off weekend, but we're in one of those stretches where the UFC is just coming in fast and heavy and quick, and you just don't even have time to process all these events. Thank God Bellator is in a bit of a slumber, just so we can catch our breath.
Right.
But in that main event, it is Chris Cyborg taking on Jana Konitskaya. I think I did a better job pronouncing it than I did last time on the show. I should be better.
Well
at the
done.
Name.
Yeah. Well done.
She trains out of Albuquerque. She's on the local news quite often, and those guys say her name fine, so I should get better. Cyborg is expected, I think rightfully so, to really roll here. Konitskaya is the Invicta bantamweight champion. That credential does not help her in any way against Cyborg. I am interested. Cyborg in the recent past at least, hasn't fought so regularly. She did fight at the end of 2017, and she's fighting again in March. That seems to be about a normal cycle, but I am curious to see if there's any rust on her. And she did look a little rusty against Holly Holm. Holly Holm, though, is a very tricky fighter. Any way that we see an upset here, Zach?
No, I don't think so. This is one of those fights, one of those main events where it's like, it's always fun to watch Cyborg fight, and it's fun to watch her dominate opponents. And I think that if you want to see that this weekend, this is the card to buy, because I really think we're looking at just a complete onslaught from the Cyborg's perspective. Easy win, and I think she's going to make short work of her.
Yeah, there's not much to say there. I mean, if it gets pushed to the later rounds, I think that then maybe becomes the story. But even then, it should be dominant for Cyborg. How do you think this card does on pay-per-view?
Oh, man, I don't think it does very well at all, to be completely frank. I think, it just doesn't have – I mean, even when the main event was Holloway against Frankie Edgar, I had my worries of the drawing power, just because the name value just isn't quite up to par. And you take Holloway off, who was the main draw at the time, and I know you're replacing him with somebody the caliber of Chris Cyborg, but she's not in a fight that's intriguing enough to say, hey, I need to stop everything that I'm doing and drop $65 to watch this. You had that feeling when Holly Holm was opposite her, but I mean, yes, Cyborg's a big star, but because she's essentially fighting a jobber here, in my opinion, that main event doesn't ring as bright as it should for a main pay-per-view like this. So I don't think it does well at all.
Hey, as James Ellsworth taught us, any man with two fists and a beating heart can get the job done, but I don't think that's going to happen here. Yeah, I don't think this is going to do well.
Never say never, but...
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a Barry Horowitz in upcoming. Yeah, right. Cyborg versus Holm was, at the time, one of the most marketable fights in all of the UFC, and that only did 300,000 buys, and as we discussed at the time, there's a lot of things working for it with when it occurred and the holiday weekend and all that. This card doesn't have those things going for it.
Yeah.
So I expect just another one of these run-of-the-mill buy rates where it looks like it's just the base of UFC fight fans that are buying this thing. The co-main event features original headliner Frankie Edgar taking on Brian Ortega, which I assume is basically a title eliminator. I've got Ortega here just based on the fact that these things tend to go badly for the person that takes the interim fight when they're waiting on their title fight, and that's just how things for some reason happen in MMA. I know that's not an extremely informed analysis, but I feel that's the way it's going to go. I my heart always kind of is with Frankie Edgar just because he's a fun fighter who's just been around forever and is still effective, but I think Ortega gets the win here. What say you, Zach?
Yes, I agree with you. I think Ortega gets the win, and I'm actually, I don't know that this fight, will draw hundreds of thousands of people, but from somebody who's going to watch anyway, I really think this is an intriguing matchup from a lot of different angles. I think you know, from on Ortega's side, he's got a real chance here to solidify himself as the next contender to Max Holloway and really take that next major step up the card, and just there's that major next step to being a potential star for the UFC with a win. So it's a really important fight for him. And on the flip side, it's an important fight for Frankie Edgar just because I still think he's playing with fire with this one. I mean, he had his title opportunity. He waited for it once due to his injury. And I think he's really sticking his neck out here in taking this fight without having that Holloway fight under his belt first, because if he loses this one, I think he immediately, like you said, drops out of the title picture and Ortega gets put in. So it's such an important fight for that division and for both of these fighters, obviously, and just for the future of that belt. And I think it's going to be an entertaining one on top of that. So you add all those elements together, and this is the fight I'm looking forward to most come Saturday night. And it means so much on a lot of different levels. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. But, yeah, I'm going with Ortega, too. I just think he outlasts Edgar, and I just think he ends up just being a little bit too much to handle in there. And ultimately, I don't think he's going to knock him out or anything like that. I think it's going to be a unanimous decision in the end. But I'm taking Ortega, too.
Yeah, and at his age for Edgar, if he doesn't get his title opportunity now, that might be his last chance. So this is a huge fight. Stakes very high for both men, but in particular,
yes,
Frankie Edgar. We're not going to go down the whole card like we normally would. We're a little crunched on time due to all the technical issues, but there is some stuff to point out. You got Kat Zingano returning after a really long layoff, almost 2 years out of action. And, you know, she was on that track. She had the early loss to Rousey, but she was on that track as someone who was really going to get back in the swing of things before her injuries kept her out for so very long. So that's something to watch. Also, we finally have the UFC debut of Mackenzie Dern. For those who don't know, highly touted prospect, this expert jiu-jitsu player, and really she's the one that's pegged to be the successor to Ronda Rousey in several facets. If you're looking at how these things work and what direction the arrows point, so that is a very big moment for her and a big moment for the UFC. Quite frankly, that'll be the main event of the prelim card. Now, Zach, normally we have a lot of fun segments. We got our fact or fiction. We do all this stuff. We do our MMA makes pro wrestling guy mad segment that we've been having a lot of fun with. We can't really go in depth with that a ton, but I did find one comment very quickly that I'll read before we sign off here. So last night, after the events at the Elimination Chamber, Ronda Rousey tweeted out a picture of her throwing Triple H to the table with Stephanie looking on. And, you know, she tweeted out, "Finally signed to at WWE. The night definitely could have gone smoother, though, dot, dot, dot." So cool tweet and kayfabe. Really appreciate that, you know, that it's not just like, you know, they took the picture with Triple H after or whatnot. But the very first comment under it is some guy with a check mark. And now here's my opinion on check mark guy. If you have a check mark and I've never heard of you, I don't care about your opinion. In fact, I loathe you, the fact that you have a check mark and I've never heard of you. And apparently, according to his bio, he's a crypto trader. So that's all it takes, Twitter, to get check mark.
Oh,
Wade Keller just got check marked like 2 months ago, and he's much more famous than whoever the hell this check mark guy is. But his tweet was cringe. Imagine signing for that fake S word and then a cry face emoji. And then right under him, some guy just tweeted back, "And yet she still accomplished more than you could ever hope to." So I think that's a good way to sum up this whole show we had today, Zach, and all our technical difficulties. We were more in the vein of the loser with the blue check who was so angry at Ronda signing for the fake stuff. I think we're more in that guy's category. We can only hope to be in the guy that responded to him's category. Zach, if people want to complain about our short show, where can they find you on Twitter?
Hey, complain away with blue checks or no blue checks at Z Hedorn, at ZHEYDORN. I'm there talking pro wrestling and talking MMA, UFC, everything in that arena can all be there at Z Hedorn, at ZHEYDORN. Check out the MMA Torch column this week. It'll drop Thursday or Friday. And then I have a pretty cool
Artistry of Wrestling column up on the PW Torch side of things, featuring an interview with Jimmy Jacobs, talking about a recent promo that he did on the independent scene. A really great promo. Highly recommend pen to his Twitter account to view that. So there's a really cool interview with him that I was able to do. I think you guys will enjoy that on the PW Torch side of things. But complain away.
And you can send your frustration to me at Rob M. Vallejos. That's RobMVallejos. You can also follow the brand at MMA Torch. Send us your questions for this show specifically and other MMA-related inquiries at MMA Torch. You can email the show at MMA Livecast, MMALIVECAST @gmail.com. And then you can follow all the brands. Go to MMA Torch, check out Zach's columns. Go to PW Torch, check out that interview with Jimmy Jacobs. PW Podcast, get the latest reviews on all the pro wrestling personality-hosted podcasts. PW Torch, and of course, always go VIP. It's WrestleMania season. This is probably the best time to subscribe, to look historically at what the heck is usually going on this time of year. What was going on when Mike Tyson was coming in, and how does that relate to what's going on right now with Ronda Rousey? So I apologize for the short and truncated show. I apologize even more for the technical issues. Hopefully next week it'll be business as usual. For Zach, I am Robert. Let me let you hear a little something about going VIP, and then we will talk to you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s, but you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject. And it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects, and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is life.